And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome back to About Time for True Crime, your favorite true crime podcast.
You guys.
How are you doing? How's life? How is this beautiful day?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
What's going on?
What are you listening? What are you doing?
Where are you listening?
Are you driving?
Are you? Are you alone in the car? Is there anybody else with you?
Oh my gosh, hi.
Is it weird to listen to a podcast with other people in the car? Sometimes. Depends what it is.
Okay, so I've driven out to the Northeast quite a few times from the Midwest, and my dad came with me once, and I was like, can I put on a podcast? And he was like, sure. And so he was laughing for a while, like he thought My Favorite Murder was really funny, but I also like this podcast called My Brother, My Brother and Me, which is just a comedy advice show. Like, it's all bad questions. It's all funny, bad answers. Mm-hmm. It's like, I tried to prank my boss and now I feel like it's not working. And they're like, well, you got pranked. Sorry. Like,
yeah,
but it's really funny and it's very ADHD, I think. I was going to say centered, but I think it's just ADHD friendly because they go through so much so quick. And he was like, this is really funny, but like it takes all of my energy to keep up with them. I was like, really? This just makes driving easier for me.
I love listening to a podcast in the car. To me, like, I will, even if it's like a drive I'm dreading or I don't like it, like if I've got a podcast to listen to,
mm-hmm.
Where are we going? Let's do it.
Yes. I mean, we painted your entire house to true crime. So
seriously, some people blast music. We listen to, oh God, something on like Robert Pickton.
Yeah.
And
I think we even listened to
Israel Keys.
Yes. And did we hear a Jerry Brudos during that? I feel like we did.
We might have. We might have listened to a singular episode.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think you're right. Because there was, I remember the shoe part of it, but I didn't remember anything else. So I didn't think it was a deep dive.
No, but now I don't know.
Anyway,
who would have done it. But either way, we're big podcast people here. If you couldn't tell. And obviously you are too, because you're listening.
Hi.
So, and hey,
it's a part two, which means you're really a podcast person.
Hey, guys. Hey.
So I am going to jump into it because I have quite literally 12 pages here to get through. So we're going to be here for a bit. But hi, hello, howdy, welcome all you pod party people to yet another episode of About Time for True Crime. About Time for True Crime is a true crime podcast where we actually studied the damn thing. Woo!
That we did.
Today we are continuing the Al Capone series, and while I am so stoked to jump in, I have just a few quick reminders per the usual. As always, my sources are listed in a link below, but I watched and listened to and read a stupid amount on this that you can see in said link. But I did just want to do a shout out on this episode to the podcast Mysterious Circumstances. They did a phenomenal deep dive and actually really gave thorough, rich information throughout the entire series, but it's also three parts.
Ooh.
So check that out. That was really good. I also, of course, use newspaper articles, websites, journals, and all that linked below, but I also wanted to provide you some trigger warnings. Trigger warnings for murder and organized crime and gang violence in Chicago, I Heart You. And also, still some really fucking awful nicknames. I don't know what it is with the 20s, but they're not good. It's Storky?
Yeah, I thought it was Snorky.
It's probably Snorky.
But he chose that over Scarface. He's like,
no, like, I want to be this feared and respected man. I want to be called Snorky.
No.
No. You get Scarface. Someone else gave you Scarface.
Seriously.
Anyway, today we are going to review slightly what we talked about in part one. So if you missed that, check it out. But we're also going to cover Al rising to the top of the Chicago outfit, some horrific violence, and the ways that Al maintained his power and territory, and eventually the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. We will, unfortunately and fortunately, have to have three parts to this, so you got one more coming up.
Very much fortunately, thank you.
Well, what can I say? A hyperfixation for you.
Thank you.
So, in the last episode, we talked about culture, community, and Al's upbringing from a kid in New York City, moved to young adult husband and father in Chicago. Despite Al's responsibilities, he continued to make his own fun, drinking, delinquency, and testing out babes from the brothels.
Mm-hmm.
Al had just become second in charge to Johnny Torrio, the new leader of the Chicago outfit after Colosimo's hit was ordered. I want to make a really quick correction here. Last week, I said that Colosimo hadn't made it to the door before eating, but he didn't eat. He actually got stood up. He just didn't make it to the door when he was leaving. Oh. He was still shot in the little coat closet. I just had that backwards.
Okay, gotcha.
But when I found that out, I also learned that Torrio, who was very, very allegedly behind it, was... Okay, do you remember how I said Colosimo got divorced and remarried?
Mm-hmm.
The woman he divorced was Torrio's was Torrio's aunt.
Oh, okay.
So like...
All in the family.
Add the fuel to fire, babe.
Yeah.
You're like, you divorced my aunt and you married a new bitch and you don't want to get into prohibition? I'll whack him.
Yeah.
Anyway. So... Allegedly.
Cousin Christopher.
I didn't. So Torrio is running the outfit and Al is second in command. Al, now helping run the Chicago outfit, brings two of his brothers with him, Frankie and Ralph, and gives them their own positions. You know,
mm-hmm.
You're my family. You get your own shit. I believe they were both brothel owners, which just as a quick history lesson is just like a prostitution spot.
Mm-hmm.
But this was really like the majority of organized crime before the prohibition happened. So this is where most people had their toe dipped in if they're going to do that.
Right. More than just their toe.
Unfortunately. So that's where they ended up. And I do think eventually at least Frankie became more involved with the prohibition, like the booze part of this, mm-hmm. but I don't know. I know they started with brothels. Now, it should also be noted that around this time, Al and his brothers started using the alias as Brown as their last name. So Al Brown, Ralph Brown, Frankie Brown.
Mm-hmm.
This is in all of the newspapers that you look up if you look it up about this time, but it's them. Like, we know that.
Okay.
So Al is sort of doing the deeds, if you will, and overseeing the things that happen, while Torrio, who is the big boy up top, has sort of a quality assurance job. Like, he makes sure everybody's doing the things. Al will go and do the things that nobody else wants to do.
Yeah, so Al's day-to-day, the other guy's big picture.
Right. And mostly, Al is like a businessman and an ideal man. Torrio had Al under his wing and close, like almost like a mentor for a long time before they got to the top here. And now that they are, that doesn't really stop. It's just Al gets to take on more responsibility. It's like a promotion for both of them.
Woohoo.
So eventually, Torrio let Al run the Four Deuces, which was the Chicago outfit's head of operation in Chicago. The Four Deuces is a brothel where everybody got the same treatment, and they loved that. They were like, we don't care if you're a cop. We don't care if you're a pope. We don't care if you're a prince or a plumber or, like, an ER nurse. Like, you're going to come in here, and you're going to get treated like a fucking king. Unless, of course, you fucked us over, and then we're bringing you into the basement to torture you.
I don't think... Let me put it this way. I wouldn't frequent a brothel anyway. That's just me.
Fair.
No judgment from me. However, I don't know the likelihood that if I were to, that I would be drawn to Four Deuces.
Four poops?
Yeah, it doesn't really, like...
Or...
Call me?
Eight.
Yeah. Like, then just call it eight. Then why do I have to do math?
Yeah, it's so rude.
And also, like, I don't want to smell the... I don't know if it's going to shit. I don't know. Anyway.
No, I hear you.
Just the name of it. I feel like it could have been more...
Yeah, it gets classier. Don't worry. But
okay.
We have to start from the bottom to be here, you know? So I think the other thing that's interesting is the torture thing was real. Torrio and Capone used to, like, take people down to the basement if they had intel or they had, like, fucked them over in some way, and they'd beat them up. They'd torture them. They'd do whatever they wanted.
Oh, good.
Because they could.
Great.
Fun. Allegedly, Torrio around this time made Al go to night classes to get rid of his Brooklyn accent. Which is just really interesting because it's not confirmed, but they said he had a rough Brooklyn accent when he came to Chicago. But later, when people met him, like later in his life, they said he didn't have an accent at all. So either he picked up really quick on the Chicago, which mm-hmm. is it's pretty easy, or he actually did go to night classes, which I mean, I get Torrio was all about business. He wanted it to be good for business.
Right. And if someone sounds like an outsider, you might feel
or an Italian at a time where everybody is fucking obnoxious to Italians. Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't know. I just think it's interesting. It's kind of a shrewd move if that's true. And if not, Al did that on his own, which is also pretty cool.
It seemed like a smart move if it did work, though.
Right. Exactly.
Now, is there a specific Chicago like accent, or is it more, is it just a Midwest accent?
Chicago has its own. It's very wide and flat. So like Chicago, I'm going to DeBears.
Like, that to me is Wisconsin.
I mean, Wisconsin's similar. I think Chicago has a lot wider A's.
Okay.
Also, and this is just a personal thing. This is not an at Chicago. I love y'all. But I hate when people add S to the things that don't have S's. I hate it everywhere. It's not just a Chicago thing. I've seen it here too. But, oh my God, I'm going to the Jewels. It's the Jewel. There's one Jewel. J-E-W-E-L. No S. Jewel.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the Jewels. Of course, out here, I hear all's eyes, nose, and I'm like, my eyes twitching. So
yeah, all's I know is.
I know. I'm like, ah, and you're also smart. You can just say the thing. Anyway, I don't really have room to talk. I have a lot of weird sayings, but another interesting piece of information on Al Capone, though, is that he never was technically a made man. Technically, none of this was like the mob. The mafia, because this was pre Lucky Luciano doing the syndicate where everybody became a connected mob.
Oh.
So technically they're all gangs, which is just fascinating.
That is very cool.
But we'll talk about Lucky Luciano a little bit later, actually, because he is just after Al Capone's time. And so Al Capone literally barely missed the mark of like technically being a made mafia man.
Even though he pretty much was the blueprint, it seems
he was.
At least in that area.
Yeah. Al loved his life. And while Torrio was working a 9-to-5, making a living, killing, then he'd go back home and eat dinner with his wife and enjoy a quiet life. Al did not want to do that.
Because Torrio's the head of this whole operation.
Right.
He's the highest guy, where Al is the one pulling late nights.
Right.
Whacking guys, allegedly.
Allegedly. And that's the other thing, too.
Wheeling and dealing.
Johnny Torrio was like, I literally just want money to live with my life. Like, live my life how I want it. Eat with my wife. Travel if we want to. I'm done at 5. Like, I put in my day's work. The rest is on you. And
is that what we all want?
Yeah.
Sir.
Yeah. And Al was a rebel rouser. He was a drinker, a flirt. A man who loved a good time, lavish things and lifestyles, and he really loved the babes from the brothel, have I mentioned?
Yes.
And they all, I'm sure, loved the syphilis he gave them.
Mm-mm.
Just kidding. A lot of women don't actually show symptoms, so.
Well, a lot of them were probably, hopefully, getting tested regularly.
Ideally.
Hopefully that was like part of their work contract or something. If that was a business and they were running it and they were like, we don't care who you are and we'll treat you right, and you had potentially prestigious people going in there. Like,
yeah,
I'd probably want to see the papers.
True. But I don't know what, again, this is an I don't know. Like, if doctors are out there, let us know. I don't know what kind of STD testing they had in the 20s.
Oh, other than no idea.
I know that they could tell you if you had syphilis. And I know there was a cure that Al didn't take because he didn't want a fucking shot. Like, oh, little baby. All due respect, sir.
Yeah.
I said all due respect.
Okay. Well,
but around this time, maybe 1922, Al was out partying and drink and drove. And no, kids, don't drink and drive. It's not cool. It's not fun. It's not part of the party life. It's him being an idiot. And he actually crashed into a parked taxi cab.
Oh, wow. Was anybody inside?
No, thank goodness. Oh, okay. But he got arrested for a DUI, as he should. And Torrio, of course, then used his political and police connections to get Al out of it. Which, like, a lot of people believe that if Al had been properly sentenced here, we would have saved ourselves from 11 more pages for part 2 of 3. You know?
Yeah.
But that is not what happened.
He's lucky he didn't kill somebody then, though.
He is. He's lucky he didn't kill himself either. All of it. Idiot. Don't drink and drive. It's You can do a lot of things to yourself that impact other people secondarily by having to deal with the impacts that you face. But that is one of the plainest ways to just like fuck up someone else's and your own life.
And that was also just irresponsible because alcohol consumption was already a no-go. Where did you buy it? What did you do? So now you not only did you risk your life and others by getting behind the wheel, but you also could have potentially alerted like red flags to your like the underbelly of your business here.
Right. So, well, okay. To be fair, I was never really quiet about what they did.
Well, I mean, I know. And if but those still, connections existed and they could be bought off, I get it. Like there was already corruption in that police force, obviously. Oh,
so much.
Or at least in a few of them that made decisions that, you know, that was possible. But I'm just saying, that just seems like a pretty big spit in the face of law-abiding citizens who, you know, weren't doing that. And that's, it's not okay.
Not fun.
And today, you guys, 100 years later, we have Ubers, so there's no fucking excuse.
No, and Lyft, and any of the others. And you know what?
Or
you
a taxi, like the one he hit.
Yeah.
So.
Or you can get public trans, and your Apple iPhone or fucking whatever, your maps will tell you exactly what train to get on, exactly what bus to come on, and they'll give you the stops. So you can do it. You got it.
We believe in you.
Anyway, by 1923, Al started cleaning up his act. He had made and saved enough money to bring the rest of his family out to Chicago. So not just Ralph and Frankie. He brought his mom. He brought his sister. He brought his other brothers. Everybody was out there.
So he was about 24 at this time, right? He was born in 1899?
Yes, roughly.
So to be able to be 24 years old and to be able to afford to move your family, and he's what, first generation?
Yep.
That's pretty impressive.
It's huge.
I mean, obviously for all done in unlawful ways and all the wrong ways, but this is a positive reinforcement for all of his negative actions.
Right, exactly. And he's just raking it in, like literally raking it in. May and Sunny, his wife and son, were already out there, and I think they all shared a home, actually. So I can't tell if it was like a multiple story and people lived on different stories, or if maybe he had one other like next to his house. But as far as I could find, he only really had one house.
I feel like it's not uncommon in either that time or just Italian families in general to live in like multiple levels of the same home, to own one big, or the to live in like building. An apartment building, and have like several floors of it where it's like, so-and-so's up here, next one down, next one down, next one. You got, like, built-in babysitters.
Yeah, well, and also, if we think, too, just about, like, sociology and the way people move around, if you have your people around you, you're going to keep your people around you.
Yeah, you want to be close to your village. I feel like that's normal.
Especially when everybody's a fucking racist to you.
Yeah.
You're like, I'd actually like a comfort person by where I sleep, thank you.
Yes.
So, come 1924, there was a new sheriff in town. And by that, I mean a new politician running for mayor who did not want a corrupt city. He said, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the shit.
Ruh-roh.
I'm sick of all the politicians. I'm sick of all the police. We want a fair space. Chicago needs help.
Al didn't like, give a Dimmesdale dim-a-dam.
Al did not give a Dimmesdale dim-a-dam. And let me tell you, new mayoral candidate, we still need help. So he was done with the shady shit, and he was pushing for it. See, Torrio had the current mayor, Big Bill Thompson, not only paid off, but he hated prohibition. So he was in their pocket. He was like, yeah, whatever you want.
Wow. And he's probably drinking too. He's probably purchasing it from them. He's probably getting a cut. There's probably some arrangement made.
So they're like, not only do we have this mayor paid off, we have him in the exact same spot that we are. And you're trying to get rid of it for someone who's going to knock our shit off? I think not.
Right.
So they liked it this way. And to escape the potential of maybe any backlash of a no longer corrupt city on the horizon, Al and Torrio moved their headquarters from Four Deuces to Cicero, Illinois. And I don't know exactly which establishment in Cicero it was. I tried really hard to find it and I couldn't. Because honestly, if you look up anything with Al Capone in Illinois, it's everyone being like, he ate lunch here once. He was here once. And we're like, yes, no, we know. Thank you so much. Where in this place, though?
Even when I'm looking up photos of him, there are so many blogs about how many of them are doctored and just fake. Or photos of, like, young photos of Al Capone. Like, I couldn't. There's so many photos that claim to be him as a child. But they're just actors or, like, tough guy, like kids play, like either dressing up for tough guy, and they've been edited so hard. It's like a, you know, kind of a frumpy looking kid doing that, and they, but like,
yeah,
could be believable, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it's so, you know.
Well, and that's the thing. There are, part of the reasons there are so many different stories is a lot of this information that the truth was didn't come out until after. So there's a lot of newspaper articles that spread the wrong thing, because back in the 20s, that was a lot easier. And we'll talk about that later.
Well, and they also owned half of it, too.
Exactly. So, like, if your boss is like, I don't think we should print that, you're like, yeah, I'd like to keep my job. I guess I'll do a different article this week.
Exactly.
So it was just a lot of weird misinformation and information that was omitted and all of that. So it's a lot to research. That's part of why it took so long.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, what is true? What isn't? Every time I thought I found the truth, I'd hear something that was like, and that's a widely believed myth. And I'm like, well, fuck.
Yep.
Okay. So Cicero is just under 10 miles west of Chicago proper, but there's an issue because they've been there for a little bit. And then Cicero does the same fucking thing.
Mm.
They're like, we don't want this. We want a normal city, not a corrupt city. And they're like, but we want the corruption.
Yeah.
Give us the corruption. So they did something a little crazy, a little naughty, a little bad, a little murder for the table. They got a bunch of their men to round up the voting polls with guns. And I'm going to say this now because I'm going to talk about it a lot in the future of this episode and the next. But they're called Thompson machine guns, otherwise known as a Tommy gun.
Oh, Tommy gun.
So Aubrey's himself and his little friends and their little Tommy guns.
Oh, geez.
And they march right down to the voting polls. So they use their guns and their weapons to intimidate people into voting for Bill Thompson, the corrupt mayor that they wanted.
Which is so terrifying to just be your average citizen going in. You're like just clocked out of work and you're like, gotta go do my civic duty. And you're like, who the hell is this giant man? Is that a scar on his face?
Yes.
What does he have in his hand?
Yeah. And like literally if they didn't vote for the right person, they'd come back and they'd either get like brutally assaulted or some of them actually died.
Are you serious?
I am so serious.
So it wasn't even just intimidation of, oh, what might happen. It's you'd actually see what would happen to people that didn't listen.
Yes. Basically. And then you'd go up to vote and they'd basically be like, hope you make the right choice.
Not that it matters, but do we know what political party this was for?
I don't think they cared. I think they voted for whoever
they
would
bought.
Let them
yeah.
keep doing what they were doing.
Interesting. What's Chicago historically? Pretty liberal?
Yeah. I mean, Illinois as a whole can kind of go either way because it's typically pretty right-leaning until you get to the city hubs and then they get pretty blue, which is everywhere. So
true.
However, though, the next day was another, I don't know if this was another day of voting or if this was maybe like a pre-election vote of like who will get on the ballot because there was multiple days.
Yeah, we did things kind of different in the 20s.
Yeah, so a wee bit. So the next day was April 1st, 1924. And
but it's April Fool's Day.
No, no bazinga. Okay.
Oh, no.
the police come that day because they're like, we're sick of this shit. We want this shit to be done. So there was a judge who that first day that they were doing everything heard this and he last minute deputized like 70 police officers.
Wow.
He was like, I'm sick of this shit. We're getting it done. But partially because of the late deputization, if that's the word, and
sure.
partially because of, I assume, the element of surprise, this next day, 70 new officers go to take care of the problem, but because they're not in uniform, Al thinks that it's other gangsters from the north side.
What?
So as you can imagine, this definitely goes well, because there's a huge fucking shootout.
Well, and that just means that the mayor probably was like, you, and you and your friend over there are all cops now.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a badge and a gun. Go in there and tell them to stop any means necessary, basically, is what that sounds like.
Yes.
Like,
yep.
They got desperate, and they were like, we don't know. We're just going to mass employ for, what, like, a day to get these people to stop, and...
And I'm pretty sure they weren't giving cops machine guns.
Nope.
And when you have 70... people in unmarked cars that are dressed nicely and look like the rivals of a gang, What do you think is going to happen?
Also, there's really important that police officers look identifiable as police officers.
Unless you are specifically going undercover for something, there is a reason that there is a uniform.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's this huge shootout, and reports differ on how this started. The police reports say that Al's brother Frankie thought that because the cops weren't in the uniforms, they were the rival gangsters, so he starts firing first.
Possible.
However, police were all able to shoot back, and allegedly, Frankie died with a couple dozen bullets in his body.
Jeez, that's a lot.
So at least 24 from the people that don't have the machine guns. And then all of the other witnesses say, though, that Frankie didn't even have his gun in his hands, much less out and shooting. So who do you believe? I don't know. There are corrupt police. There are corrupt witnesses.
Well, there's corrupt gang members.
Yep.
Mafia members. There's corrupt police. There's corrupt witnesses. And then there's probably corrupt people who are recording it and putting out the story.
Right.
So you've got four different places where this can all be altered and changed.
Yes. But regardless, this did end with the death of Frankie, Al's brother.
It seems like they were pretty close, or at least their names are kind of this far been kind of said together a lot. Like they did a lot of dealings together, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And obviously, like, if you're Al and the first two people you bring out to be on your side are your brothers, Frankie and Ralph, it's going to be a pretty big fucking hit when one of them is shot.
Yeah.
So after this, Al starts picking this shit up. And by that, I mean, he gets way more violent. See, at the time, people really loved Al Capone because he was providing them alcohol during the Prohibition, which was great because people weren't going to not drink alcohol just because it suddenly became illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did the Prohibition start for worthy causes, like ending domestic violence and violence against women and children? Sure, but the people didn't want that. This is America. I'm kidding.
Is that what they said the reason? I don't even know what the reason was.
Yeah, that's why they initially did it. And then they ended it because they were like, we're not making enough money. Now that's America for you. But
there's also got to be, I mean, that's probably what they said, but what was the real reason?
I mean, yeah, I know. I want to know. But they really wanted a beer. And later, the Great Depression is starting. So they really wanted a beer. So at this point, everybody fucking loves Al Capone because they're like, we don't know why they fucking did this. It's impacting everyone, and this guy at least has the balls to do something about it. But even at the beginning, they didn't even want to stop drinking it. So to them, Al was the guy keeping their vice available, which meant he had the people on his side.
Well, and he probably also had people that were addicted that quite literally, if they stopped, they could have died. So,
well, yeah.
But you're also supplying people's, not only just some people's habit, but some people's lifeline. Like, the people probably got pretty desperate.
Oh, I'm sure. And, I mean, I don't know about you, but you hear roaring 20s, I'm thinking booze.
Hell yeah.
I think big old Gatsby parties.
Yeah, I'm thinking really cool champagne glasses.
Oh my God, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the dresses. That has nothing to do with this, but
no.
I love the flappas.
Little flap. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, though, we know that Torrio and Al had, at the time, estimated to have about half of police officers and politicians paid off in their pocket. So Al gets away with more and more violent things, but without a lot of backlash, because not only is he still providing the liquor, but the publicity of Frankie being shot down by police also gained him a lot of sympathy.
Interesting.
So what the public saw was a man who opposed prohibition, provided what they needed, and stood next to his brother getting murdered, trying to enforce what they wanted. Even if that enforcement was guns and intimidation at the voting booth. They were like, we don't care. It's going to make it fine. We'll get through it. Not to mention, even when he did something fucked up, he'd usually do something overtly generous afterwards. So a really good example of this is when Robert St. John, an editor at the Chicago Tribune, started publishing articles of all the paid off police and officials.
Oh, geez.
He's fucking naming names.
Oh,
he's
no.
Blowing that whistle. He's calling people out. And of course, Al and Torrio don't like this. They're like, no, those are our paid off guys.
Like, shut your mouth.
I'm the captain now.
Yeah.
No, they're not that nice. They are like, come on, guy, be fucking for real. And they beat the ever living crap out of this guy.
Ooh.
Robert later says that he was just walking to work and he saw two black cars pull up and guys, like seven guys, came out to beat him up.
Oh, that's terrifying.
They used batons and like clubs and soap socks. And he says eventually he just curled up on the pavement and like hoped for the best.
Oh.
And he did end up at a hospital. He lived through it miraculously. But when he got all healed and left, he got to the front desk and he was like, all right, I'm going. And they said, well, great. Your medical bill's paid for.
Oh.
And he was like, okay, well, who? And they're like, we don't know. He was like 5'8 and had like giant fucking scars.
Are you serious?
Yes. So this man like ordered him to get beat the shit out of and then was like, it's okay, bud. I got this.
I mean, I wouldn't. We're going to call that generosity?
Apparently.
I'd call it something different, but okay.
If it lets him rest his head at night. But that's not all. Al kept this generous and terrifying image because he also, once again, might not have a giant IQ, but he had a lot of brains. Okay. He then bought a majority shareholding stake in the paper and refused to let them post anything else that would fuck with what his image was and what he needed. So he was like, not only do I not like that you did it, you learned your lesson, and you shan't be doing it again.
You shan't.
Like, what the fuck? And now, Al also has a gambling thing.
No.
No. Which, who's surprised? Not me. But the thing that made it more and more possible for him was that as Al rose in power, he also owned everywhere that he was betting. So whether it was a nightclub or a horse or dog racing track, he owned it. So that way, if he lost, he still got the winnings.
So even when he lost, he won.
Right. And he liked to give everyone else a fun time, too, when he could. So, like, this is more of the generosity part, where he, at one point, gave a kid, like, a $5 ticket, which would be probably, like, $90 to $100 today.
I'd be so rich.
Worth of a ticket.
I'd be so rich back then.
And he said, hey, kid, like, number six is going to win. And the odds of number six winning were 60 to 1. So this kid ends up making, like, probably a grand in today's money because Al Capone was feeling nice that day.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
it's a weird duality.
Yeah, that or did it bolster his name and make people say, oh, he's a nice guy or he's a cool guy or just make people want to be there and be around him?
I think that there's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
I think a lot of what he does is a PR stunt.
Yeah, I don't think any of this is from his heart.
And I think if it is, it gets lost in all of the shit that he does, that who can tell the difference?
I don't think he lives in a unicorn shitting rainbows world. I think he lives in...
Oh, I've never seen him there.
Yeah. Yeah, Abby lives there and his name isn't on the lease.
No. So don't forward his mail, but mm-mm. Mine still comes.
Yes.
So. But Al does get more and more brazen with this violence and attacks. So on May 7th, 1924, there's new drama. Joe Howard, a low-level thug, starts fighting with this other guy, Jake Guzik. I know you don't know these names yet, but stick with me. You know, they're out at bars and they just get physical, I guess. And afterward, Joe Howard starts bragging to his friends that he, and this is a quote, made the little Jew whine, which is disgustingly anti-Semitic and also just kind of gross. In general, like, to be like, oh, I did this. All right. And then sprinkle in some anti-Semitism and you get Joe Howard.
Great.
So Jake Guzik is friends with Al. And so they go and they meet up and they're talking about something different entirely. And Al sees that Jake's, like, beat up. And he's like, brother, what happened there?
Yeah.
And Jake tells him and he's like, listen, I just got in this fight or whatever, but I was pretty pissed about it. So Al gets pissed. Because he's one of those guys that, like, if you're his friend...
He gives a shit.
He gives a shit. And if you're not, you don't really matter. But if you fuck him over, you're dead. Mm-hmm. Like, literally dead. So, Al goes and finds Joe Howard. And he's at this bar and he walks up to him and he's basically like, you know, apologize, explain yourself. And Joe is like, no, and you're a pimp. Or something like that. And now, was Al Capone a pimp? Yes. Did Al Capone like being called a pimp?
No.
No. He got really mad. So we shot him 4 times in the head and then 2 in the shoulders as he fell.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And now this is a full saloon. Like, this is full of people. This man's dead in front of a cigar counter, which I didn't even fucking know they had. Okay? A cigar counter.
That's pretty cool.
And he walks out. But pretty immediately after this, the
police lights his own cigar and...
Yeah.
Yep.
He's like...
Gets in a buggy.
My work here's done.
Yep. Hops on in a buggy.
But pretty much immediately after this, the police are looking for Al. So he goes into hiding for a while, like a month or so. And police can't find him at home or at the Four Deuces. And Al made it very clear to his men that they were to kill any witnesses that were willing to talk about it.
Oh, no.
But just oddly enough, when the police went around to interview people,
they didn't know shit about shit.
Yeah, every single person in the room who could have seen something just happened to be looking the other way.
It was crazy. He spontaneously had 6 gunshot wounds. I've never seen anything like it. Like, I didn't see it. But I didn't. I've never seen anything like it either.
Yeah, and then I don't know. No one was there. He was just dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And my mom's gossip was so riveting. I just couldn't look away.
I mean, really? Didn't see shit about shit.
Exactly. And now, like a month later, Al realizes he's HOTTOGO, hot to go, and he struts himself into Chicago, and he pulls this like insane move. He grabs a journalist and a photographer, and he takes them around with him to every single court and police office and attorney's office and says, "Do you want to arrest me?"
What?
And no one does.
What?
So now he's got someone to report that not only is there nothing to arrest him on, but no one wants to.
And there's photograph proof of it.
Yep.
Okay.
But while he's there, he does actually talk to this county attorney, I think it was, like the equivalent of at the time.
Yeah, district attorney, something like that, yep.
William McSwiggin. And remember that name for later, but...
I love that. McSwiggin?
Yes, Will McSwiggin.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
McSwig would be a great last name, like nickname.
That's so cool.
Anyway, so he is like, okay, no, I fucking want to get this guy. Like, I don't have anything to do it right now, but I want to. So he keeps going. And he works on this for like months, and he doesn't ever get enough evidence to even prove that Al was at the bar.
Because he doesn't have a single person to say it.
Well, there's that. There's also like nothing that shows his where, but I mean, it's a different time. So there's not like cell phones that they can track, but
there's
also
not cameras. There's not anything.
There's no receipts for gas on the stations. Like there's just nothing. Yeah. He can't even show that he's there, let alone that he put the bullet in the guy's head. So there goes one murder charge.
Wow.
And I do not support Al Capone in any of these endeavors. Okay.
Good. Yeah. Good move.
But something that did make me cackle was I was listening to the Mysterious Circumstances deep dive on this case. It's like a 3-part series. And the host was like, "All bullshit aside, that was gangster. That's gangster right there." I was like, okay. Anyway. Okay. With this, we are in Al's violence era. And his reputation slowly starts to get overtaken with the violence than the liquor sales, which is not great for him publicly.
I can see that.
Yeah. And now here's the thing.
That was my downfall when that happened.
Right.
When I went from liquor
to... You were so close to the top, too. Yeah.
And,
Rest in peace, your prohibition era.
How they fall, you know? How the great fall. Anyway, not to make it about me, but...
Well, what can I say?
I mean...
So... There's quite a few things we need to talk about in order to understand exactly how and what organization Al Capone took over. Because we're just about there. This has been about 5 years.
Okay.
But try to hang in there with me. I'm going to throw out some names that I know you don't know, but when you follow it, you'll get it. Because Al doesn't want to be in gang wars. He wants to make money. He's a businessman. He's greedy. He doesn't give a shit about what block you're on.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't really care about dominating another gang other than as long as he has enough revenue coming in.
Sure. As long as they don't interrupt with his money.
Exactly. But the North and the South Side gangs are having spats. And I mean, they always have and likely they always will. But it is turning ugly at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Al, in attempts to keep some peace and have everything calmed down, tries to make a map of territory to share. And yes, the Chicago outfit is like running the show. But there is one big gang in the North Side ran by Dean O'Banion, and the North Side of Chicago at this time was primarily Irish immigrants. And I know there's like Irish Catholic and there is Italian Catholic, mm-hmm. but the Italian South Side gangs tended to run more in prostitution before the Prohibition, and the Irish gangs up north were like, God doesn't like that.
We'll kill and do everything yes. else, but we draw the line at a brothel.
Yes.
We'll go there.
God forbid you get syphilis, but us, we'll just do the rest, okay?
Oh my God.
So this is sort of a lot of their background and history, but Dean O'Banion is the leader of the North Side Gang at this point. And they're like the two conflicting biggest powers.
Gotcha.
But here's the thing, though. Everyone's crossing territory lines all the fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
And O'Banion gets pissed off. And Torrio is still running things, but he isn't helpful with rage management or keeping people in their place. He is the big picture guy, not the day-to-day. And so he doesn't really do much when problems arise here. Not that he probably wasn't giving orders, but he wasn't helpful and people knew that.
Mm-hmm.
So O'Banion doesn't want his shit taken, although ironically he himself is busting trucks before they get to the South Side Gang. So like, okay, pot, where's the kettle?
Mm.
But in hopes of getting more business, O'Banion sets up Alan Torrio and he basically sends them to, I don't know if it was like a shipment of booze coming in or if he just knew they were going to be somewhere and he called the police, but he gets this place raided and he knows for a fact they're there. So they get busted and actually get sentenced to a little bit of jail time. I don't think it's a lot of jail time, like maybe a few months.
Well, yeah, but also Al Capone owns half of that anyway, but it's more just probably throwing a wrench into things, not earth shattering, but it's an inconvenience and ties him up. So now this other guy has
yes, and it time. Gives O'Banion a little more time. Exactly. So O'Banion, while they're gone, is doing whatever he can, but also part of that is bragging to absolutely everyone he can that he did set up Alan Torrio.
Aw, man.
Which is a stupid ass move.
Don't do that.
Dumb. It's dumb. Because after they get released out of jail, Alan Torrio set up a hit on O'Banion, because why the fuck wouldn't they?
Obviously.
They call up their old pal, Frankie Yale. Remember him from last episode?
Mm.
Al's friend and bartender from NYC, and they order a hit out on O'Banion. And now pretend with me you're a gangster in your flower shop, which is, of course, your cover, right? It's your headquarters, which is really cute, actually. And you're prepping flowers for a funeral. And it's important to you because it's a fellow gangster funeral. Okay. So you're snipping your little peace lilies and like probably fucking foxglove because you hope someone eats it.
How you doing?
Oh, and your arrangements are, I actually wrote this, and your arrangements are tied together with a gold chain and an, oh! When three
I
men
didn't.
I didn't
Christopher
I any quote from Christopher lives rent free in my head.
Yep.
You said she had a good ass. I was trying to say something positive.
I was trying to say something positive about her. She's your friend. What was I supposed to say?
Him and Al Capone would have gotten along. You got a nice ass, honey, and that's a fact.
That's a fact. I'm just being honest.
I know. But imagine this is the scene, right? You're like dressed up. You're doing your little arrangements and three men walk in. And this guy goes out and he shakes your hand like a normal fucking day. You don't know him. You don't recognize him. Except while you're shaking his hand, he refuses to let go.
Ooh.
And then the two men on either side of him just start blasting bullets into your head. And then, oh, what's that? The guy shaking your hand is too?
Oh, I'm not worried about my hand anymore then, I don't think.
No, you're done. You're Ooh, dead. And that is terrifying. How Dean O'Banion died, in his own flower shop.
Oh, jeez.
But Dean O'Banion obviously wasn't alone in his gang, or a gang wouldn't really be part of it, huh?
No, just be a very lonely club.
So, this is my favorite name in the whole thing. George Bugs Morand.
Bugs.
Bugs Morand. And Jaime Weiss were the next two in charge, and they were fucking pissed. I think they took over the North Side Gang together, but they could have also just been, like, tight up at the top.
Smugs.
Yeah, right? And they wanted retribution for the murder of their friend. And while Obanian died in November of 1924, it only took until January of 1925 for them to try to ambush Capone.
Makes sense.
He was at a restaurant and Weiss and Moran shot up Al's car. Al ended up totally fine because he was inside, but they still hit his driver.
Oh, geez.
And they shot like literally 30 bullets into the car. And Al gets so mad because he was like, yeah, whatever, it was supposed to be me. And he's pissed about that. But he's like, my driver had nothing to do with this. He wasn't in this. He wasn't in the gang. He drove me around.
Do you know how hard it is to find a good driver?
Right. I keep hitting curbs and saying whoopsies.
In this economy. I could just turn up the music louder and louder.
I'm spilling his drinks. You know what I mean? Seriously. And that's money. Time is money.
Time is money.
So is your drink.
So is that.
Anyway.
We're just 0-2 over here.
So, yay, cute or whatever that he cared about his driver, but don't subject him to the backlash of your own bullshit. Like, you can't be that surprised.
I mean, what do you think was going to happen? Come on.
Exactly. But it's not even 2 weeks later that on January 24th of 1925 that Johnny Torrio is shot too. He'd been getting home with his wife when four gunmen attempted to kill him in front of his own home.
Oh, Jesus, is he okay?
In fact, he
not anymore. It's 100 years later.
Well, yes, not currently.
Was he okay?
He was, but just barely. He almost didn't make it. He had been shot in the chest, neck, arm, and groin, and one man put a gun to his head, pulled trigger, and it clicked. Like, he was alive by the sake of no ammo.
Wow. In the 20s, I don't know what our hospitals were like, but they're probably like, shit, I don't know. I mean, but
like, normally when people are sick, we try to drain them of their blood. I don't think we're there yet, but
we got an ice pack. I mean,
you want to, we don't really even have penicillin. You want a gumball, brother?
Yeah. Like,
but Johnny got to the hospital and shockingly, but did survive. And he refused to say who did it. They all had a code of silence.
Not a fucking rat.
Right. And a 17-year-old witness is the only reason it's been noted that Bugs Moran was there. Because otherwise, Johnny said nothing.
No.
Yeah.
No, not the 17-year-old.
I don't know what happened to him, but I can guess what happened to him.
I can guess what happened to him.
Yeah. So, Johnny Torrio gets sentenced to 9 months in jail. What for? Beats me. But he does. So
after he got shot.
Yeah.
Right. What a rough day.
It could have been.
Sorry, it's a shit
same
day.
24 hours. I don't know that it was that close.
It's just so bad. Sorry.
But it was maybe racketeering, maybe bootlegging, maybe violence, maybe all of it. Who the fuck knows? But he pays off the warden for a bulletproof cell and two armed guards 24/7 because he's like, they almost got me.
He's like, I'll do my time, but I'm not going to die here.
Right. And he was like, the fuck they're going to get me in here? Because you thought the outside hospital was bad.
They'll try for sure.
So, right after he gets out, he's like, you know what? I'm fucking done. I'm retiring. He fully taps out. He gets out of jail and he's like, Al, listen, it's all yours, Al. Me, I'm quitting. It's Europe for me. Direct quote.
Okay.
He said, fuck it. I'm going to Italy. And he does. And he leaves it all to Al. And Al is 26.
Wow.
He's got political and law enforcement protection, bootlegging, connections fucking up to Canada. He's got money. He's got profits coming in from people below
him. Brothels.
He's got workers in almost every industry. Like, they literally have mechanics for the gang. They've got delivery people for the gang. Like, everyone. He's got someone in his pocket in that field.
Jeez.
In a very quick summary of Johnny Torrio, just so we get this, I'm skipping forward a little bit. We'll pick up right back where we left. But Torrio does go to Italy and he stays for a really long time. And he does have to come back later to testify in a trial we'll talk about for Alsif. And
Alsif.
He does end up mentoring Lucky Luciano before dying of a heart attack at 65 in 1957.
That's young.
It is young. It is young. But it is about average for the time.
Wow.
Which I found out only because you had me look it up.
Well, I do want to know, but that is still, I mean, it's average, but in today's standards, that's very young.
Yes. Today's average is much higher, luckily. But
that's also, again, probably the lifestyle, the stress, probably drugs and alcohol.
Coke, the booze, the hookers, the constant attempts on your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Torrio just wanted to sit at home and eat food with his wife.
Well,
He didn't do that, really.
No.
No. But he did for a little bit at the end.
But don't worry, he mentored who ended up being, like, the biggest gangster, so...
Yeah.
Legacy.
Luciano is the one that created the mafia as a whole, so... I mean, that's cool.
Heck yeah.
I guess in this way, is Torrio the grandfather of...
Yeah, woo, Italians represent.
Ow, ow.
Yay.
Anyway, Al takes over, and he moves the headquarters to the Metropole Hotel in downtown Chicago. It's super lavish and fancy, and like 5 stars for real. He has secret tunnels built in so that he can always have an escape if they get raided or police bust in. He holds press conferences anytime he's accused of any crime. And he is the biggest target for police, but also other gangs, because he's super successful and he has zero desire to hide it.
Well,
in the words of Nicki Minaj, I give zero fucks and I got zero chill in me. You know?
Oh, jeez.
Because of this, Al gets very security focused, which he really never carries a gun on his own, but he constantly has 2 armed guards with him. I mean, hell, the man had more security than the president did at the time.
Jeez.
No joke. Not to mention, he had a $20,000 custom Cadillac built. $20,000 in 1920s. Okay?
Wow.
That allegedly weighed 7 tons because it was armored and bulletproof.
He said, not today.
Yes. And remyalcaponemuseum.com. Check it out. Allegedly, there's also a rumor that the president bought this, but that is not true.
It wasn't Kennedy.
No. And from what I can... Rip. From what I could tell, it is now like $1 million on an antique site. But who knows if that's legit. I don't know.
I'd buy, like, the wiper.
Yeah, right?
It's not really in my budget, but it would be cool to have a
right?
part of history like that.
So at the head of the Chicago outfit, at 26, with no other positions to achieve in the organization, Al got living, baby. He was young. He was fun. He was dumb. Okay? He spent money like that was his day job. All
jeez.
Right? Not only to mention a $20,000 car back in the 20s, but he also loved custom suits, nice jewelry, top-end cigars and watches. He liked gourmet foods and drinks, brothel babes, mistresses, and his favorite liquor, fun fact, was a Templeton rye made out of Iowa. Hmm. Represent. Now, because the security guards, Al's exorbitant display of wealth, and his charity donations, alcohol sales in the Prohibition, violent reputation, and probably because he held a fucking press conference every time anybody said his name, he became a full national celebrity. So not just in Chicago. People knew him.
Of course, but also at the same time, if your goal is to not play the game, you just want to make your money and do what you want.
Yep.
Would you not want to be a little bit more discreet about that? Because aren't people going to come sniffing as to how you have that kind of money?
You would think.
I mean, I know you've paid off a lot of them, but they're going to be people that are interested in being paid off, or you can't afford them.
Correct. Also, there's a lot of people out there that work in the government. A lot of them. In a lot of different places. In a lot of different jurisdictions.
So, I don't know. It just seems like a really big way to if you're living this lavish life, somebody you're going to catch somebody's attention.
Mm-hmm. And he does. But...
I mean, obviously, we're talking about him here.
Right.
But, I don't know.
And so, I want to say it did and it didn't go to Al's head. Like, it went to his head in that he could do anything he wanted, and he did. But it didn't in that he still kept his head enough in the game that he was making money moves.
Hmm.
See, from the very beginning, he was and remained a business guy. And he was smart. Everyone in the outfit had a job. Mechanics, builders, runners, fighters, the whole ordeal. And yes, he just problem solved and learned how to use people's strengths to his advantages, but that worked for him. And while he estimated himself to have half of the politicians and police in his pocket, now other sources like journalists and prosecutors are guessing that too.
Yes.
So everyone who knew him and saw how he operated says that Al was a phenomenal businessman, and if he put the same effort towards a legit company, he probably would have been the CEO of like a Fortune 500, which I don't doubt. He is a very good leader. And to be honest with you, The last time I brought up that people said that Al has a low IQ, and I wanted to briefly get into this and explain why I don't think the IQ really measures your intelligence, truly.
Is it really low IQ, or did he just not give a shit about school?
That, but also why I don't see this getting in the way here. I mean, I want to do a very brief history on an IQ test, because an IQ test is technically called an intelligence quota. The way these are scored has to do with the test that you take in order to get that quote-unquote quota, but it also takes into account other factors. At first, the test score was measured by calculating your score and dividing it by your age and then multiplying it by 100. So the average IQ would be 100. Hmm. Ideally, your score is the same as your age, and that's how you get there. Which is also why our IQ would always be changing, because it would matter when you're getting scored. So if you are a child genius at the age of 10 and your IQ is 300, but you never learn anything else for the rest of your life and you're 40, your IQ might be 85.
Mm.
But we did change that, and I think that's a good thing, because now it's developed into a standard deviation curve and all of that. So it's helpful to know for our testing purposes, but
for his,
it was age-based. Now, I don't know where they think they did an IQ test. This might have been in like a psych assessment while he was incarcerated at some point.
Mm.
But Al's test score was 95.
Okay.
So it's not really that low.
Mm.
And when I did my neuropsych test for my ADHD a few years ago, they tested my IQ, and that's a standard deviation chart now. And I think this is important for a few reasons. IQ testing, like any testing, does not test your ability to learn, but what you already have.
Mm-hmm.
So it says nothing about what you can do in the future. But also, I don't know about you, but if they asked what I had for dinner last Thursday, I probably couldn't know that in an instant.
Mm-hmm.
I might need a little prompting. I might have to be like, oh shit, I did this. I went there. Oh, okay. No, I had that.
Mm-hmm.
But this test is only administered in a few hours. So it really only tests what you can remember and easily recall in a few hours. Not really what you know and not what you can.
Mm-hmm.
But I bring this up because I don't think Al Capone was stupid at all. Yes, his score was a 95. Yes, that's less than 100. But it's 5 points less than 100. And he dropped out before the eighth grade.
Yeah, and he was also using a test that is outdated now.
Right. And not to mention, when I did mine, the tests they provided were a wide range of like drawing and recreation of patterns or shapes and memory recollection and language breakdown and guessing like parallels of things. It had nothing to do with my interpersonal skills, how well I led, or how in depth I could think through a plan, which mm-hmm. are all logic and people management skills. And Al had those down.
Right.
So his IQ might have been a 95, which, by the way, today the standard average for people is 85 to 115.
So average.
Yeah. So he is smack dab in the middle of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Al's life as a boss was good. He knew how to use people and their strengths, and that's all he had to do.
Yeah. And we're talking about him now in three parts. So I mean, he did something. I mean, right? True crime podcast.
I don't know. But he did something.
But could he control, effective. Could he manipulate and control people and get them to do what he wanted to do? I think he had a pretty successful journey of that, considering, what was it, tax fraud they got him on?
Yeah, only that. Okay. Only that.
Okay. So, you know, I mean,
and
in,
did
the,
you?
In the grand scheme.
Yeah, he did pretty good.
I
for
mean,
himself. Not yeah, for good himself. General,
not
good
for morally, himself. Not to us, but, you know.
So, Al's typical life as the boss was pretty good, and he tended to it well. Typically, he'd get up and he'd take his time getting moving in the morning, which jealous.
It's hard to see other people living your dreams.
Truly. And then the rest of his day, he was just managing. He was on the phone, calling people, checking out tasks, jobs, networking, finding new leads, trying to torture people if they knew information on him, keeping under police radar or intimidating people who could get you busted. He literally had half of everyone in Chicago paid off, but a lot of them even liked him for a while.
Mm.
You know what I mean? First, he started using more violence. That happened after Frankie died, but it just kept escalating. He'd have people killed, and it's estimated that he ordered hits of around like 300 people.
Okay. That's a lot.
Which, if spread out over the age of 16 to 33, so when he started and when he ended his gangsta activities, that's roughly 1.5 hits a month, or 3 every 2 months, for 17 years. Evenly spread out.
No. You think, but he took a break for the holidays and picked back up more in the spring?
Probably. That seems to be most trends in social work.
He's like, yeah, Catholic, you know, just
he's really? Like, Merry Christmas, you live till March.
Mm-hmm. Like, he went to church Christmas Eve, don't even.
Oh, I know it. But that's not all, because beyond the guns and the beatings and the turf wars and wax, Al started getting gutsy.
You said wax, and I thought it was W-A-X, and I was like, oh, was he? Yeah. Italians are hairy. We are hairy, I don't know.
Not waxes.
Yeah.
Wax. But whack. Like I said, he was a money guy. He wanted as much as he could, and he wanted to keep a revenue stream. So he rarely hurt people that helped his business, but he was not afraid to force people to help his business. All right? For example, Al used to offer alcohol all over Chicago. Yes, primarily in the South Side, but anywhere. And if a speakeasy, say, didn't want his alcohol, well...
They're going to start.
Isn't that so funny? Because he just bombed them.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's funny about that is when you're a speakeasy and you're running an illegal establishment, you can't go to the bank to get a loan to fix your shit.
Mm.
So then he would offer them a loan with like 800% interest.
Mm.
Oh, and you know what part of that is? You're selling my liquor.
You should have just done it.
Yeah. So now he would be getting revenue from them and he'd be getting interest from them forever.
Jeez.
Fucking guy. So late December in 1925, Al takes Sonny, his son, to New York City for a doctor's appointment. And if you remember, Sonny is at least partially, if not entirely, deaf. And at the time, the best care they could get for this was in New York, which brought Al back to his old stomping grounds quite a bit. So while he's in this trip, he hears from his old boy, Frankie Yale. And Frankie asks for a favor.
Mm-hmm.
He has Al and two other men take out 3 of Yale's enemies. Capone and the two other men did get arrested, but once again, isn't it so funny? None of the surrounding witnesses happened to be looking. I saw this beautiful tree and a cloud that looked like a rubber ducky. I couldn't.
Didn't see shit about shit.
So, you know, there goes 3 other murder charges. Yeah, and by the way, the 300 is the hits that he requested, nothing that he took part in that I know of.
His son didn't hear a thing.
Nope.
He was just along for the ride, looking out the window.
Best witness there is.
Jeez. And, well, it's just awful. Like,
yeah.
You know, and you probably think, like, oh, my dad's just here to take me to this appointment. You know, he's probably used to the traveling at this point. But I'm sure over time he put together what everything was going on. I mean, he heard the talkings. I'm sure he heard the whispers at night. He probably sat at the top of the stairs and tried to figure it out if he could, you know, to try to piece together what was going on. But, like, you have to go to a doctor's appointment and your dad's literally killing people on the side as you're going. And, like, you're trying to piece together what's happening and who are these strange men that you haven't seen since you were, like, 5.
And you're like, hold on, my cochlear implants haven't been invented yet. What was that?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Seriously, that's just how challenging to be an only child. You're probably having to watch your mom deal with what your dad is doing.
And she's also, by the way, entirely gray. Young woman.
Also, your dad was like 26 when he took over an empire. He's young as hell. So let's call him 30.
Yep.
I don't know. Let's call the kid, what, 10 maybe at this point? Like, I don't know. That's just...
Yeah, it's
that's
nuts.
So much for a kid to grow up with. Plus, he's going to have some kind of difficulty understanding his environment because there's probably no services available and they got to travel across the country to even get to them.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just insane. And I can imagine you're a kid. So,
and dad's going to kill people on the way.
Dad's 26, maybe 27 at this point. He gets married when he was 19. He has you a few weeks later. So you're probably 7 or 8, and now your dad's 26 and probably thinks he's the hottest shit because everyone thinks he's the hottest shit.
Well, because he kind of is. He's living like that. Why wouldn't you believe that you are?
And then you're traveling from state to state, so you probably think you're pretty cool. I mean, not like for no reason. He's a kid. He's not involved in any of the bad shit, but like He's going everywhere and he's just trying to keep up with it. And I can imagine at eight, if people are fucking with my head because they are trying to do research or trying to figure out how to help my disability, I'm going to want to hold someone's hand. I'm not going to want to wait for you to come back from the business run with your friends
and wonder why there's blood on your shoe.
Right. So history has affectionately titled this piece in gangster prohibition history as the Beer Wars.
The Beer Wars.
Yes. In April of 1926, they were still going strong.
This sounds like a weekend tournament.
Right?
at like some Greek life party.
Yeah, a frat.
Yeah.
A frat like field day.
Yes.
The Beer Wars.
Like a darty. Yep.
Oh, God. O'Banion, who had just gotten killed, had left Jaime Weiss in charge of the Northside gang. And once again, Al just wanted to make money for the most part, except when he got a tad lot bit vengeful. He wanted to make a deal and be done with the anger and the beer wars. And obviously, the Northside gang had tried to hit Capone twice. So he was like, I'm sick of this shit. I'm ready for it to end. Capone says, hey, buddy, hear me out. I'll give you a shitload of money and offer to be the exclusive alcohol provider north of Madison Street, and I won't interfere at all.
Hmm.
And I'll try to keep others from interfering, too.
Mm.
And Weiss is like, brother, no, you killed my fucking best friend in the whole world. Do you think you can just throw some money at it and wipe it out?
Brother, no.
Brother, no. I think not. Instead, Weiss came back with, okay, but kill the men who killed my friend.
Okay.
And obviously Al knows who this is,
mm-hmm.
right? So Al goes, yeah, all right.
Okay.
And he leaves. And Weiss gets some jail time for something else. Again, I don't know if they had that convo in jail or before, but it wasn't long after if it was before. Because he comes out of jail and decides he's going to make O'Banion's old flower shop his new head of operations, which is like very cute and bromance.
Ooh.
It's like, I miss you, brother. Let's hang out in the flower shop.
Where you died.
Yeah. My best friend Emily and I are always giggling when we watch The Sopranos because we were like, men, and this is for silly purposes, so no, not all men, but men need mafia shows to express their emotions because they're always talking about like how they love each other and they're proud of each other and they're family, and we're like, see, it's good.
See, you can do it. It's okay.
Again, jokes, but we thought it was funny. So all of that to say, Weiss is like, that's my friend's flower shop, and now I'll always work here. And Weiss really wanted to get retribution. So he starts rebuilding, like in sports. It's a rebuild year, okay? He starts making new friends and connections with bootleggers, rum runners, and wholesalers, and everyone else he could. In fact, he finds anyone he can or even can remember who didn't like Al Capone, and he tries to make them his friend. Because, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
It's not a great way to make friends.
Oh, but it's what Weiss wants. He wants anybody who hates Al Capone on his side.
Mm.
So on April 27th of 1926, two of Al's enemies are spotted in Cicero and they're gunned down via orders. Like, he's like, fuck that. No, this is my town. This is my area. I believe this was on Al's orders. Like, that's my guess. Of course, I can't really confirm that because people tend to report it was just part of the beer wars. Boo-hoo, dig deeper.
Right, no one saw shit about shit.
Right, but if you do check in the sources I linked, I put in a newspaper clipping that also alleged Torrio as a suspect, even though he had retired at this time, which was very interesting. So I don't know how much anybody knew about what was going on.
Okay. Be kind of cool if it was him, though. He, like, came out of hiding.
Right, he was like,
pew-pew, and went home.
It's me, Torrio. Kill that bitch.
It's a me.
So in this shooting, three people were killed and another three injured. And Al didn't know this, but William McSwiggin was one of those guys.
McSwiggin. Okay. Aw, he died?
Yeah, he died, which was really sad. But when Al finds out, he goes to Lansing, Michigan to stay undercover for a while. And I'm pretty sure this is proof that it was at his orders, but
I mean,
he goes and hides out for a while. And for me today, it's so silly and hard to think of all of these places being escapes because of the access to planes and trains and automobiles and technology and GPS and location and cell phone pings and browser history, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But 223 miles in the 1920s was a lot more than a quick road trip that it is today.
Yes.
Alhide's out there for like most of the summer. Like he's there for a few months. He said, I want to go to Lake Michigan. I want to put my toesies in the sand.
I'm sure he said toesies.
I'm sure. The dogs.
The dogs. The dogs are barking.
They weren't there though. Lake Michigan is beautiful. Do you remember those Tim Allen, like Tim Allen Michigan commercials? Did those air out here?
No.
Oh my God. He could make me want to put like a chopstick through my eye and he'd make it sound good. I was like, yeah.
Now I need to look that up.
That being said, Lake Michigan is great. It is not like putting a chopstick in your eye. But while he's there, everyone back in Chicago is getting fed up. Not just the politicians and police who want peace. The ones who are paid are probably exhausted and unhappy unless they're drunk in a brothel. And the public starts getting restless with all of the violence. They were tired of the daily shootings and bombings. And before, yeah, it was gangsters killing gangsters. And yeah, they provided the alcohol, but at least it was just between them. Now innocent people are getting caught in the middle.
Yeah.
And Al doesn't seem to want to level with them the same way he had before. And bad things used to happen, but he would talk about it. He'd be like, yeah, this is for the greater good. Like, that was a bad person. This thing happened. I don't know anything about it, but you have nothing to worry about. And now he's not doing that.
Hmm.
Hiding after this did not help his reputation or image because, again, before he used to hold a press conference anytime anybody said his fucking name. And now he's like, I need a vacation.
I need a vacation from my vacation.
Right. So, you know who's taking note of all this, though?
Mm-hmm.
Jaime Weiss from the Northside Gang. He's like, oh, my God, amazing opportunity. I see that. I'm going to slip right in there. So while Al is gone, he keeps up his vengeance plot and networking. He's looking for Al's networks and he's working with the cops. Now, I don't know if this was at his command or not, but the police and prosecutors take his leave of absence as a chance to start finding any dirt on Al that they could. While there's not enough evidence to connect Al to these murders or convict him of other things at this point, the raids that happened on his businesses and personal assets start to paint another picture for officials. This could get them somewhere. Tax evasion.
Okay.
So come July of 1926, Weiss is ready to get back at it, and he has plans to attack Al. Essentially, for brevity, he kidnaps Al's driver and tortures him.
Oh.
This man's poor drivers. They never get a break.
Dude.
Man never made a peep, despite having been hit with branding irons and had cigarettes put out on him, and worse, I am sure.
Mm.
But he never said a damn thing. Weiss shot him in the head, and Al finds out, and he's done. He's fucking pissed. He's over it. But that's not all, because come September of 1926, Al is at the Hawthorne, doing business as usual. And 10 cars full of hitmen with Tommy guns empty their carts into the place. Like, they drive past it and they just shoot. And now Al, of course, like, hits the ground and he's got bodyguards and all of that. So not a big deal. But once it seems to quiet down, he looks up and he steps, I don't know if it's outside or towards, like, a door or a window or something. And the bodyguard notices that it's a fucking decoy. And he spots another, like, 7 or 8 cars coming around the corner.
Oh, geez.
That shoot up again. And so Al, luckily, like, very nearly kept his life. He gets, depending on the report you read, he either gets tackled to the ground or hits the deck on his own.
Wow.
But reportedly, there were about 5,000 bullets fired in under 10 minutes.
Jeez.
That's insane.
Do you know how many risks for, like, civilians to get hit there were?
Yeah. That's why people are getting fucking done with this shit. And so nobody died that day, but one was injured and they were an innocent bystander.
Of course.
Al actually does pay the hospital bills and does not take over this man's job. So at least there's that. And Al wants a truce. He's like, I've had enough. You've tried to kill me a billion fucking times. It's not working. I'm bulletproof. This time, baby.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just over it. But the negotiations fall through, like you might imagine, because Weiss is once again like, but that was my bestie.
Mm.
Which I get.
Hey, I do it for you.
Thank you. Back at you. Where this picks up, though, is in October of 1926. Joe Saltis, an Al Enemy made wife's friend, is on trial for murder. That doesn't really matter here. That's just the situation we're entering.
Mm-hmm.
And Weiss aids and gets Saltis a defense attorney and gives like literally $100,000 to this man's defense.
That's which a is lot insane. Of money.
And the first day of the trial, October 11th, Weiss finishes up and he goes home. He has a list of juror names in his pockets and he's got a list of witnesses in the safe at the flower shop.
Ruh-roh.
Now, this, I'm assuming, is probably so that he can intimidate some people into finding his friend innocent.
Of course.
But he gets to the headquarters and he's trying to get everything in order. But at the same time, Al had a few watchmen set up at the place across the street.
Mm-hmm.
So before Weiss could even get out of the limo fully, he's shot dead in the middle of the street.
Well, play stupid games, win stupid prizes, I guess. You guys are all animals running around like that. Come on now.
Yeah. But this leads to Bugs Moran now being in charge.
Stop killing each other.
Bugsy. And Moran had lost now three of his closest friends, and he was angrier than all of them. Probably because he outlived all of them, but he had a fucking bone to pick. So now, not helping is Al, who, just to be a dick, sends the message of condolences and like, hey, oh, I had nothing to do with it.
That was intentional, though.
Oh, yeah.
That was a poke right at him, like, sorry for your loss.
Wasn't me.
Hope you guys can feel better soon.
Warmest wishes. Best regards.
Yikes.
And all of this is within 1 month of Weiss leaving jail.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it's a fast fucking month. So a few things worth mentioning happen in the next few years. The violence continues and the owner of the Hawthorne gets kidnapped and killed. Al starts trying to get away more frequently to places like Omaha or Cleveland or Little Rock with fake names. In early 1927, newspapers and attorneys are doing the math and publishing that they believe Capone to have made illegally something like $1.5 billion in today's money without paying taxes on it.
Sounds about right.
I mean, he had an 11.5-carat pinky ring.
Mm-hmm.
That, in today's money, is definitely well worth over $7,000 on his pinky.
Just for the pinky.
But, you know, things aren't all bad. Big Bill Thompson is reelected in Chicago and is already paid off and hates the prohibition. Mm-hmm. So that's nice for them. Al gets to relax a little bit there. He goes to baseball games with a decoy son. Yeah, he literally wouldn't even take Sonny out because he was like, what if somebody hurts him?
What if someone hurts this kid?
That's what I'm saying. Fucking rude. What? So then in 1928, Al gets a $40,000 mansion, which is a 14-room retreat in Palm Island, Florida. That, by the way, is like $610,000 today. And then he drops the equivalent of $1.5 million in renovations.
But what even is his front, right? Like, we can joke, you know, Tony Soprano had waste management.
He didn't have one.
But, like, he wasn't even smart enough to have something to kind of have
some income coming from.
Just make it for appearances sake. Yeah. To even just have something on the surface level. I mean, he didn't even have anything. It was like he woke up when he fucking felt like it, left when he felt. He didn't have a job to go to.
No, and he had nothing that he was quote unquote offering.
He was all dressed up with nowhere to go.
Yeah, except everywhere. And probably your funeral. Like, it's nuts to me. And maybe that's growth. Maybe that's why Tony Soprano had waste management, you know? He said, look what happened to Al.
I don't know. I just picture him, like, hiding out in Wisconsin. He's like, don't make me go up there.
Yeah.
I'm in Wisconsin. Don't make me come down. Is that how they talk? I don't know. Is that not it? What?
That's really cute.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Joan Cusack. No, a little bit.
A little bit. You still have like the longness of out here. It's very flat and wide. Wisconsin. The cows. How many cows?
Wisconsin.
That being said, for all of his wealth, he wasn't an idiot. He never had anything in his own name. So he just set other people up for tax fraud. The houses, the cars, everything was in his wife, his mother, his brother's names, never his own. And in the wake of this very small wave of peace, Al starts cleaning up his image again. It's 1928 now, in the very early beginning of the Great Depression, which, if you Google, yes, says it started in 1929, but things had to get bad first for it to be classified, okay?
Yes.
Al started donating tons of money to charities. I mean, like, a ridiculous amount of money to charities. And this is the one thing that, regardless of the intention, was beneficial for Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
He started opening up his own soup kitchens in Chicago. And for whatever reasons, whether it's selfish or selfless, Al was the only one doing this.
For the tax write-off, though?
Well, maybe, but there weren't grants or Salvation Armies or federal funds going to this at all. He was literally the only one doing this.
Okay. So is this the one thing we agree with him for?
Yes. And many people ate and sustained themselves for years on 3 meals a day provided by Al Capone. Which, is it great? Yeah. Was it for great reasons? Almost 100% no.
Yeah.
But those people might have done something great with that, and I'll take that.
Mm.
Things really start to spiral, though, in 1928. Because, sure, Al had enjoyed baseball games and giving back in mansions, but money isn't everything, darling. And Al actually got into a really big fight with his friend Frankie Yale.
No, don't fight with Frankie.
There was an organization, another gang, that Yale was a part of, and there was like a Chicago chapter, which feels very frat to me.
Feels very Greek life.
But they needed a new president. And, well, Yale wouldn't back the same one that Al wanted.
New president?
Yes. Al was like, I want this guy.
And not
was
a capo, like, not a not a head, not a...
No, a president.
Aww.
A president of the chapter.
Well, it's awfully cute.
They have the e-board meeting today at 8 p.m.
Oh.
Okay, there's going to be pizza in the rec room.
I love that.
But Al wanted to pick this person because it would give him a worker to run in another organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't get into it because this was a Sicilian organization and Al was originally from Naples, like his family line was, so he wasn't allowed.
I'm Italian and Sicilian. Get fucked.
Hey.
Hey.
You can't outwit a Sicilian.
Oh. It's funny hearing a lot of this stuff because I've grown up hearing a lot of the like stories of my Italian side of my family, mm-hmm. Italian, Sicilian, just the racism that existed against them. They were, people treated them horribly. And for decades, it was awful. And just hearing sort of like this other side of it of like, not of course this wasn't the reason for it, but like where so many of these stereotypes came from, it, I mean, there were people like him. These are people like Al Capone.
Yep.
Are the reason why those things existed. And then, you know, it was made worse by what any depiction of any Italian in any movie.
Oh yeah. Was the either media did not help.
Was either the thug or the mobster. From like the 50s to the 90s.
The bad boys.
So, I don't know.
It's interesting. And really, the most extreme people in any group are the ones with the loudest impact.
It's funny to hear it, but then, you know.
To live the opposite, right?
But it happened. Yeah. I mean, there it is.
But wait.
There's more.
Because Al said, hey, brother, help a boy out. And Yale said, no, brother, I'm not doing that.
Oh.
I want it all. So Al gets pissed. And suddenly, after they talk, alcohol shipments from Yale specifically start getting hijacked. And Al's like, yo, what the fuck? It's only Yale's shipments. I think it's on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And he sends a guy out there. His name is James D'Amato, and he wants James to spy on him. Since Yale knew all of the other guys, Al was like, it's going to have to be one of the new boys. And he did. He sent him out there. And James was like, sure as shit, Yale's hijacking his own trucks before they even leave New York.
Oh, geez.
So before James could leave New York, though, he does get killed, presumably by Yale.
Mm-hmm.
It's my guess. But Al sends this terrifying telegram, unsigned, and it says, Frankie, someday you'll answer to D'Amato. Or something along those lines. And boy, did he, because come July 1st of 1928, Yale was at a speakeasy, having a little fun, okay? He gets a phone call from a mystery person. We don't know who. Never found out. But before anyone knows anything, he drops the phone and he full sprint decks it to his car. And he starts driving like a fucking madman. He peels out like a bat out of hell, and the car starts getting shot up. Eventually, Yale is killed while driving and crashes into a home.
Why would you run to the car that's going to get shot up?
My guess is they told him it was some emergency somewhere else. That was that imminent that he starts running and then he gets shot up in the car. That's okay. A theory.
I can see that.
I wasn't there.
Oh, I thought you were. Never mind.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I shouldn't have asked.
Do-do-do-do-do-do. So the car that's chasing and shooting at Yale.
Yes.
Peels out, obviously, they keep going, but they throw out their Tommy guns. And now, not only could these be traced back to a guy who pretty consistently supplied Al Capone's guns, it was the first time in history that machine guns were used in New York City.
What?
Yeah. Allegedly, this was done on purpose. I tend to agree with this one, but it was to send a message that, like, Capone was here. You do not fuck with me.
Interesting. First time they were used, like, in the commission of a crime?
As far as I know.
Okay.
Yeah. He may not be in your city, but he can still get business done if he needs to, baby.
This is how we handle it in Long Island.
So, skip the calendar forward a bit through 1928. Everyone's still fighting. Al's still sick of it. Miranda's still pissed. Daddy was a cop on the east side of Chicago. And that's an old song reference. It's so good, I swear. And it's about the exact incident we're about to talk about. And it was either track 7 or 11 on my mom's old classic rock CD mix. Thanks.
Okay.
It's called The Night Chicago Died. Thank you very much. We'll link it below. So
thanks, Mrs. Abel Dabelson.
In all honesty, though, everyone's getting more and more angry as they all lose more men. Well, everybody's grieving. Everyone's probably drunk, which isn't helping. And the entire business is kind of built on men that are willing to use violence against each other. So
yeah, but need to be alive to do that.
Yes. So today we're going to talk about the Valentine's Day Massacre. Because on Valentine's Day of 1929, five members of the Bugs Moran gang and two others, a mechanic and a friend, meet at a carriage company in Lincoln Park. And they had been nicely dressed, suits and ties and best wear. Hell, they probably all had dates that night. It was fucking Valentine's Day. But they come
their
in.
Their girlfriends, not their wives.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe both. 1 at 5, 1 at 8.
Friday nights are for the girlfriends, Saturday nights are for the wives.
Ooh, love that. Okay. So they come in and there's a few conflicting reports on why they all get together. Because the typical story that gets spread around is that all of these men meet up to hijack some crates of whiskey or rye off a shipment.
No, oh, thought it was for snugs.
However, it was all of Moran's best men. And they were all dressed really nicely. And it's pretty rare that you get all of the most important men in a gang together dressed nicely to do physical labor.
For sure.
So the other, and what I think is probably the more realistic theory that goes around, is because they're trying to meet up to talk about taking a hit out on Capone.
Makes sense.
Yes. But they all get to this garage carriage company and it was all set up. Al had used some men from the Purple Gang in Detroit to dress up for him. And see, two were dressed like cops and two were dressed like civilians.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to this carriage company in two different black sedans. Both of them, by the way, looked just like undercover police cars. So there are two lookouts across the way and they see the men that are well-dressed come to the carriage company. And the lookout gets a little bit confused and ends up mistaking one of these men for Morand. So he calls in and he's like, the rabbit is in the hole. You know?
Okay. Like and bugs, like Bugs Bunny.
Oh, wait, that's cute. I wonder if they did use that.
I don't know. Was Bugs Bunny around back then? Gotta be.
Gotta be, Doc. Anyway. So they mistake this man for Morand, but it was not Morand. And reports vary as to why it was not him. Some people say he was getting a haircut for a date that night. Others say he was just running late. Some people say he was coming and then he saw the undercover police cars and he did a 180.
But the goal was for it to be him.
Correct.
But it was just his best men instead.
Yes. And okay. They had mistaken one of them for him.
Okay.
So the lookouts made a mistake and the men went in and did what they had planned. The two men dressed in cop uniforms lined up the seven men in the carriage company on the wall. They walk mm-hmm. in and they're like, put your hands up, get on the wall or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now they all went along with it.
Because they think it's a raid.
Right. They think it's a raid. And part of all the cops being corrupt and in their pocket was that if you bribed them with enough money, they were always fine with it.
Mm.
But it was quite literally the middle of the day. It was 10:30 in the fucking morning. They were like, they're just putting on a show for all of the public, for the witnesses around, because there were witnesses.
There were witnesses?
Yes.
Okay.
And instead of being able to bribe them, instead of being like, hey, buddy, I got $20 here.
Yeah, right. It's
probably a shitload. Let us go. The cops just open fired instead.
Oh, geez. Now, and they just were wearing cop uniforms or yes. like stolen uniforms or something like that?
Yeah, there are two men wearing cop uniforms.
Yeah, okay.
So there are seven men. Five of them are from the Northside Gang. Albert Kachelik, Adam Heyer, Albert Weinschenk, Frank and Peter Gusenberg, and then there's Ryan Schwimmer and John May. And Ryan Schwimmer, I think, was just like an associate of the gang, but not in the gang.
Mm-hmm.
And John May, I believe, was the mechanic. It okay. could be swapped, but one of them was not officially in and a friend, and the other was a mechanic. And now, you may be asking, what the fuck? Why were there four men that Al made go if only two did anything?
Mm-hmm.
And you ask great questions. See, they actually gave the two men not dressed as cops a role to play because they get taken out of the building handcuffed, like the police have it under control. And they're arresting these men for doing that.
Oh, it's pretty smart.
It is pretty smart, actually.
Couldn't do it today, but pretty smart.
Hell no. And we are at the end of this today. Much like Linkin Park, we are one step closer to the edge and we're about to break. So next week, we're actually going to discuss the investigation into the St. Valentine's Day Massacre and how that leads to Al's eventual downfall.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah. Actually, fun fact, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre is one of the very first uses of forensic ballistics. And we'll talk about that.
Ooh.
So next week, we'll talk about the last chapter of Al, his arrest, his time at Alcatraz, his end of life.
Oh, my.
And we got to do something more gabacool, you know?
Well, I'm learning a lot. Thank you so much.
Welcome to the 1920s, you see?
You see, hey.
So, yeah, this is part two of Al Capone. I'm sorry for all of the insane names I'm throwing at you.
I'm loving all of them. I like McSwaggin.
McSwiggin.
McSwiggin.
Yeah, I'm with McSwiggin. Like Cedar Rapids.
McSwigs.
McSwigs. Oh, I bet McSwigs would be like a great frat bro nickname.
I feel like McSwigs would be a really good like pong partner.
Yes, I was actually just thinking that.
For the Beer Wars tournament?
Yes. Let us know if you're on a t-shirt.
That's terrible. But I'm sure it exists.
Oh, probably.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a lot, but it's kind of fun because it's so far removed, but it is awful in the totality of it. Like there are so many lives lost without absolutely any care or reason.
There's 300 that you just know of that he ordered that he didn't do.
As far as I know, yeah. It's insane. Even if the 300 includes people he did, that's an insane number.
That's a lot of people.
A lot.
And that's just also needless. And then that's not all of the retaliation that happened because he did those things.
Right.
Now those people need to get him back. It's just, ugh.
Well, and Chicago needed help at this time. Like, they really did. And it's really hard because a lot of this stuff was really within state lines. So they have a hard time getting federal help. They have a hard time getting a lot. At mm-hmm. some point, and I think it honestly, I don't think it's after this in the timeline, but at some point they even threatened in Chicago to like bring in martial law because it was so bad.
Well, and a lot of times in these situations, you have a lot of like fighting amongst government entities mm-hmm. where like nobody really wants to take ownership of like, okay, whose responsibility is it to restore order? Yep. Like, is it the cities? Is it the county? Is it the state? Is it the federal government? And so you have all these places that like they want the funding, but they don't want to be the ones that have to.
They don't want the burden of the responsibility. Yeah.
Like they really want the funding up front, but they really don't want to really go down if it doesn't go well.
Right.
Right. So who has to fund that? What do you do with homeless? What do you do with drug crime? What do you do with violence? What do you do with all of that?
What do you do when it's 1928 and people don't even have enough money to feed their kids, so they're selling them?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to figure out how to stop people from killing each other over the booze that you banned.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's wild. Al always had like these really funny quotes, I think, when he'd talk about things. And they're funny because they're just fucking lies. And no, that's still a lie, I think. One of the quotes is, "I'll go as deep in my pockets as any man to help any guy that needs help. I can't stand to see anybody hungry or cold or helpless." Now, cold and dead, he's fine with. Mm-hmm. But cold and helpless, God forbid.
Mm-mm.
Anyway. All right. Well, that was all of that. I hope you took notes because we'll talk about it next week too. But in the meantime, if you wanted to see the people, the places, the things, you could do that at our Instagram by searching at About Time for True Crime Pod with periods in between every word. So that is ABOUT period, TIME period, FOR period, TRUE period, CRIME period, POD, because podcast was way too damn long. But if you wanted to send us something longer, a pod pet, a case recommendation, a request, how much you love and adore everything you hear, and you're like, oh my God, amazing, phenomenal, you could email that us. You could email that to us. But Allie, where would they email that?
If you wanted to send us an email, you wanted to send us the, I don't know, a case recommendation, if you wanted to send us your feedback, if you wanted to send us something that happened in your hometown, I would love to actually do like a listener like series or something. I think that would be a lot of fun. If there's anything that happened near you that you would like us to read, we would love to do that. Also your pod pets. We love pod pets here.
Yay.
Send them. If you want to do that and more, you could do that to our email, which is abouttime4tc@gmail.com. So that's abouttime4tc@gmail.com. We love you and we love to see you. Don't forget to rate, review, download, tell a friend, tell a foe, share.
Yeah, make friends, make fiends. Give us a 5-star review.
An enemy of your enemy is a friend. Don't do that. Just be friends. Just be kind and don't do any of this shit, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
But do that until next time and then after. But if I do look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
You see?
See you later.
Nice ass, honey.